Welcome to The Informed Gardener with your host, Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott, Associate Professor and Extension Urban Horticulturist at Washington State University. And now, the science behind gardening with Dr. Linda.
Hi, I'm Linda Chalker-Scott, and welcome back to Season 3 of The Informed Gardener. I'm here as your online garden advisor, bringing you current and practical scientific information for use in your own gardens and landscapes. Every week, we try to follow a theme throughout the podcast, and this week's theme is getting your money's worth. During our interview, we'll spend some time with plantsman Riz Reyes at the nursery to get his take on how to get the biggest bloom for your buck. But first, let's look at getting your money's worth in the news. Here's an article from ScienceDaily.com. And it's on landscape architecture, so a little bit different than our usual type of news item. And the name of this one is Landscape Architecture Survey is Plant Knowledge Passé. Well, of course, this is enough to get any gardener up in arms because plant knowledge is never passé, and the more you have of it, the better. But this is really interesting because I used to teach college courses, and one of my favorites was Landscape Plant Selection and Management. And it was about half landscape architecture students and half horticulture students. It was perfect. It was a blend of the science with the design, and we had group projects working with client bases, and it was just a wonderful experience, and they both learned from each other. But what I did notice is that the landscape architecture students really didn't have that much in the way of a plant background. In fact, it turns out they only had to take 3 classes in plants at all. They had to take a soils class. That's not even really plants. They had to take a plant ID class, and they had to take my class. So they had 3 classes that were somehow related to plants, and that was all for their entire 4 years that they had to have before getting a degree in landscape architecture. So I thought that was kind of interesting and really kind of sad. So this study was really of interest to me. What they did was they interviewed a whole bunch of landscape architects someplace in the southeastern part of the United States. And out of the many questions they asked, the ones that were of most interest to me were, are the newly established graduates in landscape architecture proficient in their understanding of plant sciences? Perfect question. Because to my mind, and I think to a lot of people's mind, a cornerstone of being a landscape architect is knowing exactly how to select and incorporate plants into a design process so that you're using the right plant material, you're not using too much, not using too little, it's going to last, you're not going to have disease problems. I mean, there's a lot to this. It's not just another design element. In the survey, they had almost half the participants say that they had more or less an average understanding of plant materials. So based on the classes they took, based on their continuing education classes after they graduated, they self-rated themselves as an average amount of plant material knowledge. But when they were asked, what about the new landscape architects that are coming out of the colleges, 71% of the respondents said they didn't think that the new people coming out had as much experience as they did. And this isn't just in the field experience, this is actual coursework or continuing education experience. And even worse, 73% of the respondents, so this is almost 3/4 of the people interviewed, said that they felt that the profession of landscape architecture as a whole had distanced itself from plant materials compared to previous years. So in other words, over the last 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, that landscape architects know even less about plants, how they work, what they need, and how to incorporate them successfully into a design than they used to. So what does this mean for the study of landscape architecture as a whole? Well, if I was running the world, and maybe I should be, I would certainly be having students take a lot more plant materials classes. I don't think they need to take a lot of the theoretical stuff. They obviously need to take the practical stuff. And as much as they can integrate their classes with horticulture students or other people with an applied understanding of plant and soil science, the better prepared they're going to be for the real life of plants in a landscape.
And he was walking in the garden. And he was walking in the night.
Landscape designer, horticulturist, and plantsman extraordinaire Riz Reyes joins us again to unravel the mysteries of plant shopping. We visited a local nursery a few weeks ago to find out how to get your plant fix for just pennies. And where exactly does Riz get his best bargains?
So first things first, I mean, you really take it down to the bare basics, because we have listeners here that are just avid beginners that are just starting out, and then your seasoned professionals and your fellow professors. So, going to keep it simple for everyone. So we want to understand the basics of what we buy. So we've got our trees and shrubs, obviously, and then we've got our herbaceous stuff, which are typically your annuals and perennials. So annuals are plants that basically complete their life cycle in one year or one season. You plant the seed, they grow, they flower, and then they're dead. And then our perennials, though, you plant them, they'll grow, and they die back, and then they come back year after year and get bigger and better. It gets a little confusing because there are plants that are actually perennial in warmer regions, whereas here in the Northwest, they're actually annuals. One good example for us are the canna lilies, actually. A lot of them, the canna lily actually grows from a rhizome, or people say bulb, but technically it's a rhizome. Here, you know, sometimes they'll come back, sometimes they don't. People like to dig up the rhizomes after it gets cold and they die back in the fall and overwinter them. But generally, if you plant them, they'll grow. They have lush tropical leaves and, you know, a orange or yellow flower, and then pretty much they're done. But in the southern areas, in the warmer parts of the country, they're perennial. They come back and they multiply and get ginormous. So, you know, that's one example. So a lot of it is understanding and knowing your plants. But if you know your basics, you know, your trees and shrubs, and then you have your annuals and your perennials. So when you shop at a big box store, the best deals really here are your annuals. Typically, when they get in their annuals, you can get them in what they call the six packs. They're, you know, the packs of, you know, six cells of like little plugs of, you know, their petunias, for example, your impatiens and your marigolds and all that sort of stuff. Those are annuals, and you can get those relatively inexpensively here if you're just looking for color. You know, you're not particular about a particular variety or anything that's, you know, rare or heirloom. The box store is the best place to just get instant color inexpensively. Okay, so I almost do a lot of my annual plantings here. So things like your geraniums, technically they're the pelargoniums. They are the ones that, you know, grandma grows in the window box kind of deal. They're red, they have roundish leaves. You know, those I often get here because they get an assortment of colors, and they're, you know, $3.95 and whatnot for, and they're usually, you know, flowering. So fuchsias are also very hot and very popular. You can get the full, like, you know, already grown, you know, greenhouse grown in full bloom. They're usually ready by Mother's Day, and you can get all your starts, you know, there of your fuchsias, you know, easily here, very inexpensive. And then you have your perennials. Now, the perennials at times, again, look at the labels and, you know, do a little bit of homework. One tip I would do is to make two trips to a box store. One thing I'll do with clients sometimes who insist on shopping in a box store are they want, I tell them, okay, well, let's take some photos of things that catch your eye. Okay, you know, most people have smartphones now with a little camera, and just take little, you know, photos, or just, you know, if you don't have a camera, you know, take a little notebook with you, write down what looks good, you know, do a little bit of homework if it's an annual or perennial, and then come back, so you'll have a little bit, you know, to work from, so you know what you're getting. So with the perennials, they can vary, because some of them are just plain varieties that are kind of, you know, tried and true. Like, you'll see your daylilies, your bachelor buttons, your candy tuff, and all that sort of stuff. Any of your kind of common, you know, perennials, basically anything that grandma grew, you can get here, you know, relatively, you know, inexpensively, and they're usually, you know, well grown, and a pretty good deal. You know, they're like, you know, $5.97 or something like that for a gallon size plant. So customers are incredibly anxious to plant and to get their gardens going, but in some ways it's still a little early. We still have pretty cool nights, and some areas are still getting frost as well. So again, reminder of where a lot of these plants come from: greenhouses, California. A lot of them, again, are forced, you know, into bloom, and at times if you buy them, you know, too early almost, and you plant them right away, at times they'll sit for a while, or they could potentially croak because they are leaving these perfect conditions that they've been in. And so it's a little bit tricky, but the good rule of thumb for me when I ask people to start shopping, usually late April into May, the plants have had a chance to kind of get established, and, you know, weather's a little fairly stable. But again, it varies from year to year. But But yeah, you just kind of have to, you know, resist the temptation, because it does get a little bit chilly, especially at nights.
Homegrown's all right with me. Homegrown is the way it should be. Homegrown is a good thing. Plant that bell and let it ring.
So now that you've seen up close and personal how to shop with Riz for plants at the nursery, I thought I'd take you on my own little experience of plant shopping. This happened several years ago. And this is what I'm going to call the myth of plant quality. In other words, you get what you pay for. So this particular experience started about, it's been almost 10 years now. And I was in a relatively new house for me, needed a whole bunch of new plants, primarily trees and shrubs. So I decided to go nursery shopping and check out some of the more higher end nurseries that I usually didn't visit, because now I had a new landscape and I wanted to get the very best for my landscape. So the first thing I looked for was some ginkgos. I really love ginkgo biloba. It's a very ancient tree. It actually used to be native here in Washington State, and it's a great urban tree. It puts up with a whole lot of urban insults like air pollution and compacted soils. It does very well here. So I found several of them. There were somewhere between 6 and 7 feet tall, very nicely shaped, but they're in 2 gallon containers. So now you have to imagine this, something that's, you know, pretty much the size or larger of a full grown man in a little 2 gallon container. Okay, this is a red flag for those of you that go plant shopping. A tiny, tiny container is going to have big, big problems inside. So I pulled one out of the pot, and you can do this at the nursery. It's perfectly allowable to pull a plant out of the pot and to inspect its roots. And inside I found finger-sized woody roots completely encircling the root ball. Okay, this is a problem. It's very difficult to unwind, if not impossible, to unwind roots like this. It's a problem. It's worse than a can of worms. It's a can of roots, woody roots, and you don't want to have to deal with those. So I just put it right back in the pot, because these were $80 trees, and I was not going to spend $80 for a woody mass of roots. So they were all the same. I checked several of them. I finally gave up on the ginkgos. I gave up on that nursery. I went to another nursery, and I found some white flowering Ribes sanguineum. And if you're familiar with Ribes sanguineum, this is actually red flowering currant, but this is a white variety of red flowering currant. Very pretty. Now, these are very loose in the soil, very easy to move around, so I knew I wasn't going to have these root problems. A healthy specimen looked great. But when I got it home and pulled it out, it's a three-foot shrub, so nice tall three-foot shrub, and had a 4-inch cubical woody root mass in the middle of it, with a bunch of little roots coming out of it. So imagine this, you've got a shrub that's 3 feet tall, good sized shrub, it's, you know, probably 2 feet wide, and its roots are encased in a 4-inch square. This is not a good thing either. So out came my pruners, and I do some pretty drastic root pruning with stuff like this, and I cut most of those roots away. I was really ticked off. I should have taken it back, but it's a giant hassle to return stuff, especially in Seattle traffic, so I just dealt with it. And what you have to do in these cases is you just have to give it lots of TLC, and actually, 10 years later, this plant is huge. It did just fine, but I was really irritated that I had to buy a really crummy root system. So, third nursery I went to, and this is after I'd taken this one home and seen it, so I was not going back to nursery number two. Nursery number three, I was looking for a red bud, and I found some in B&Bs, but then that's bald and burlap specimens, but all the balls were really, really small in comparison to the crown size. And we already know what happens when you have a really tall plant and a really small root mass. It's going to be a problem when you open it up. So I went to the containerized plants. These are the ones that are in the plastic pots, and they were all firmly rooted, you know, but not too badly rooted. I pulled them out and didn't have these great big woody circling roots, so that looked great. But then I looked at the crown a little more carefully, and what I found out was that all the leaders had been pruned back. So the whole thing had been sheared, so it was like a lollipop. So it looked like a miniature adult, and its structure had been completely destroyed because it had been sheared into this non-natural shape. To fix this, I mean, you can fix it, but you have to get it home, you have to get it planted, you have to let it grow a bit, then you have to start doing corrective pruning, and you do it over a number of years, and I didn't want to do that. So I decided not to buy that plant either. And now I'm getting really irritated because I've got all this money in my pocket. I want to buy my plants. I want to plant my plants. All I'm finding is crap at the nursery. So I took this plant back that had the sheared crown. I got my money back for that one. Instead, I bought some 5-gallon containers of vine maple, that's Acer cercinatum, and mock orange. And those are both a couple of native plants for our part of the world, and they're very nice plants. They have good crown shapes. They're pretty loose in the pot, maybe a little bit too loose, but you know, at this point, I was really desperate. So I bought them, paid a lot of money for them. And I got them home, and there's these nice big 5-gallon containers, and I pulled them out of the pot, and they were bare root. 5 gallons of media, brand new spanking media, and a bare root tree. So I'd paid tons of money for a plastic pot full of dirt and a bare root tree. But, you know, whatever. This is what I now have, and I planted them. And I gave them extra water and extra TLC, and actually, both of them are still fine. They did very well. But I paid a lot of money for 5 gallons of dirt. But the point is, to paraphrase Mick Jagger, you don't always get what you pay for. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast, and I hope you can use this information to go and buy yourself some great plants this spring. Be sure to join us next time when our theme will be Better Living Through Chemistry. We'll talk about some of the botanical biochemicals that make life better for plants and sometimes even better for you. Until then, happy gardening.
You've been listening to The Informed Gardener. To catch this and other shows from previous seasons, go to theinformedgardener.com, mynorthwest.com, or search for us on iTunes. I have no reason to